Off the Ball, GAA.
But the reason we carry a smaller panel is because some players can't live to those standards and cultures that we're trying to achieve.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
All right, I'm here in Abbottstown with Mark Callum, the FAI's Chief Football Officer. Nice to talk to you, Mark.
Very good, nice to see you.
Fair to say there's a lot going on at the moment. I might start one of the more pressing issues, which is around funding and academy funding. And it certainly seemed pre-Christmas as though that government funding was a done deal. And then word comes out in recent weeks from the new Minister of Sport, Patrick O'Donovan, that it's not imminent. What's your reaction to that, and what sort of impact could it have if that 8 million is delayed by up to 12 months?
First of all, as you said, it's really important to get that funding for League of Ireland academies. So it's really important. Government do support us in lots of areas around funding. So even spoke to other countries in recent times, and the level of funding they get compared to us is not the same. So actually there is a positive, and I want to make sure that it's clear that we thank government for their support. But we do need more, and the facilities investment that we've got last year is really positive. We now want to see that in terms of academies and facilities, and academies remains our biggest priorities in terms of all our conversations. We're meeting government this next week.
Okay.
Taoiseach was at our game last night. We spoke to Minister McConnell last night as well. And those are early conversations, because obviously the change of government means that we need to make sure we build that momentum. But there's loads of positive signs of that. They've given us some funding at the end of last year to perform an audit of our academies, which is our next step in terms of getting the funding that we need. Of course, we would have wanted that funding sooner, and we need it now, but we have to, you know, do things in the right way and continue to work with government to achieve that. But it is critical, as you said.
Have you been given any indication then since the change of government as to why it's not as imminent as it once was? And are they looking for more questions to be answered around government structures?
First of all, it's positive that they've committed to that into their programme for government. So there's a commitment there already, which is written and also verbally committed and privately as well. So I think that's a good first step in terms of what that looks like moving forwards.
Yeah. Obviously, we saw Will Clark last year with his presentation. It's in the Player Pathway Plan as well, how important this money is. If it is pushed back a year, like what's the real-world impact of that?
So there's obviously a current group of players now that are 14, 15, 16, 17 that previously, as you will know, would have gone across the UK and got a level of contact time that they wouldn't be getting here. So whilst we continue those conversations with government to get the funding we do need to do something now to increase that contact time. And part of our Football Pathways Plan was designed to do that. A recently developed programme that has got a bit of airtime in the media that we're trying to do to work in partnership with clubs to spike that contact time over the next 2-3 years whilst we secure the investment. I have to say that even if we secure the investment tomorrow, it will take a bit of time to embed the infrastructure that you need within clubs in terms of appointing staff, getting the right facilities, writing coaching curriculums. All of this stuff takes a bit of time, and I've lived experience of that in a different country. It takes a bit of time. So whilst we're trying to get the investment, we're trying to do something to increase contact time as well, and that's what our proposal that we've recently aired with clubs is all about.
Talk a bit more then about that centralised coaching scheme, which it's fair to say has had quite the backlash from the clubs, bringing 250 very talented young players between 14 and 17 here to Abbottstown. How did that come about, considering everything we heard in recent times about that development of those elite young players, that it would be led by the clubs? How come it's come back with the FAI proposing to bring it in-house?
I think first thing to say is I've seen it's been sponsored as centralised. That's not the language that we're using. It's a programme to try and increase contact time and work with clubs, and that's really, really important. And it's a partnership between the two parties. We see the players staying, playing, being registered with clubs, but then in mid-term and summertime coming to us to develop and get more contact time. And I think that's really, really important, because the level of contact time that they've got at the moment is not what they need. The second point I'd make is that this isn't a national academy that you maybe would have seen in other countries. Like years ago in England, you had something called Liddershaw, where you pick the best players, they trained and lived and worked with the FA. This is not that at all. This is about working in partnership with the clubs to increase that.
They obviously don't feel it's a partnership. They feel they were completely blindsided by this.
It's a plan that we've developed. Is in our Football Pathways plan around increasing contact time for those age groups. We developed the concept towards the end of last year in terms of the detail of it, and it was ready to start sharing into the new year and in February. So we spent actually most of February and into early March speaking with all of the clubs.
But as you were developing it, and as you decided to develop this, you hadn't spoken to the clubs to let them know this was coming.
It's in our Football Pathways plan, committed to it. We've talked about it. Our League of Ireland department have talked about the need to work together in terms of clubs and the FAI. And then we spoke in detail. We spoke to every single academy manager between February and March around this concept, and talked in detail what it looks like. And it's been actually positively received. Obviously, in the last couple of weeks, that's got some different coverage of what that looks like and a bit of confusion about what it is. But actually, we don't see this lasting forever. We believe in club-led player development, but we have to do something. And what's the alternative if we do nothing? There's good 13, 14, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds that aren't getting the level of contact time that they need to develop to be professional footballers or international footballers. So we only see this lasting for a period of time until the academies get their infrastructure right, get the investment, get the staffing right, get the quality of coaching right, that ultimately they can take responsibility for that.
The sense coming out of that letter that was written from the League of Ireland clubs, where they spoke about it demonstrating a lack of regard and respect, poorly conceived, doesn't warrant serious consideration, that language would suggest this is dead in the water. They're not going to release the players.
We continue to work with the clubs. So we met with our National Leagues committee only last week, and we spoke to the group that you're referring to in terms of that letter, and said that we'll continue conversations with the National Leagues committee over the next period of time.
So what happens if they don't release the players?
We've confirmed to them that we're not going to start the programme until they're comfortable with it, and we actually see this as a positive thing. I think it would be a really sad scenario if we get to that point where clubs don't release players, because ultimately this is for our young people, our young players, to give them the best opportunity. But we listen to their feedback. Mm. We've taken some of their views already, and we'll adjust some things. But we want to make this work, and we believe this is the right thing to support players in the short term and the medium term.
They clearly feel, though, it's not the best opportunity for young players, that the best opportunity is within their own academies.
No one organisation can do this on their own. So clubs can't do this on their own. Mm. We can't do this on our own. We have to work together, and we want to make sure that that's clear moving forwards. I've worked in different countries. I've spent a lot of time at FIFA events, UEFA events, talking to different countries. Lots of other countries that are trying to do this similar type of thing. And ultimately, it's about the players, and that's what we're trying to do. And I think we just need to keep sight on that we all want the same thing. We all want our League of Ireland to be the best. We want our clubs to be the best. We want our international teams to be the best. And for that to be achieved, we need the best players. And we're trying to support players to make sure that they become the best players they can be.
One of the standout parts of the Pathways Plan 12 months ago was around the aligned calendar, and it was always going to be one of the more controversial parts, and it's proven to be the case. Where are you right now with the aligned calendar, with, it seems, several of the organisations running underage football saying they're not going to implement it? Obviously, the most high-profile one being the DDSL. Does that mean that essentially an aligned calendar is dead in the water as well?
What we're trying to do in Irish football is not just tweak a few things here and there or fix a few things. We're trying to step back, do a lot of consultation to get feedback on what needs to be sorted. We're one of 55 nations in UEFA that don't have an aligned football calendar. Now, sometimes being an outlier is a good thing. In this scenario, it's not. And we need to make sure that we have an aligned football calendar. So the alignment's important, but also the different elements that. I was only speaking to someone the other day, a dad of a girl who plays in a team. They had their last fixture in the weekend just gone. They had played 17 games, his daughter, and they're not playing again now until August in terms of pre-season. All of that period of time is where the pitches are better, the weather's better, the nights are longer. So it is about alignment, it's also about these other benefits that you get.
The argument against that, which I'm sure you're aware that the DDSL would put forward, for example, is they have surveyed players, parents, club officers, and that while the players may want to play, that essentially the volunteer base isn't there during the summer.
We took this through a democratic process. We did a lot of consultation. We spoke to a lot of people. We took it through our General Assembly, and it was ultimately you know, positively voted through, and now we're committed to doing this. The plan and the like and it is going to happen. It's really important that that happens.
What do you mean it's going to happen? Does that mean that
we're committed to it?
You're going to take it out of the league's hands?
We're committed to delivering the aligned calendar, as we said at the end of last year, and we're committed to doing it still now.
But the DFL, for example, have said they are not going to implement the aligned calendar.
I understand your point. Like, our DFL look after football in terms of underage for the Dublin area. Our job as association is to look at all of Irish football. And when we did our analysis, the old player development plan was designed to give children good football experiences, but give them the best chance to develop as footballers as well. Only 20% of our leagues, out of all of the leagues in the country underage, are actually compliant with that old plan. So that basically means that they're not playing enough football, they're not getting enough variety. There's big gaps in the calendar when they're not playing football. So the football experience they're having is not as good as it could be. And we're not giving our children the best opportunity to achieve their full potential. What I would say, though, is that there is a lot of good work that's happening as well. So we want to work with clubs and leagues to make this happen. And we're doing a lot of work in the background with them to make sure this is a success.
Why do you think that the leagues, the DDSL and the other leagues around the country that say they're not going to implement this, why do you think they won't implement it?
It's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? Change isn't easy. Not everyone likes change. And when you're used to doing things in a certain way, then it's natural for sometimes there be opposition to that. And I'm sure that's the case in some areas. And there's groups that probably are doing a good job or believe they're doing a good job. But just to break down the aligned calendar in simple terms, what we're asking leagues and the game to do is register between January and December and then organise their football between those months. And quite simply, that in really simple terms, that's what we're asking them to do, rather than register from a typical August through to July. Mm. We're actually just trying to change the registration period to align everything we're trying to do and use those fair weather months when there is better weather, better pitches, better environment for people to enjoy their football to maximise the opportunity. So some of the examples you've given is actually just shifting some of the stuff you do into different months of the year. And there's lots of good work. So actually, okay, just do that at a slightly different time of the year, and we think that can have massive benefits for players.
Is all of that going to have to be volunteer-led?
Do the
association have the resources to help leagues implement all of that?
We see it as a partnership between us, the association, the leagues, but also clubs. I think clubs are really important here. As a big part of our consultation wasn't just with leagues, it was also with clubs. And you get different views of that, and we're trying to speak to the administrators of the leagues and the clubs, but also the people that are on the ground coaching the football personnel that are working with players day in, day out. And there's clearly some people that are really strongly against this, but there are a lot of people that are really for this as well. Unfortunately, they're not the people that are the loudest, so you hear the people who are against it more.
Just to be clear though, do you feel in next January or maybe January 2027, every league is going to have their registration period in January?
So what was approved was in 2026 would be the first phase, which would be essentially the primary school age children, 5 to 12 year olds. In 2027 it would be the 13 to 16 year olds, and in 2028 it would be the adult amateur game. So there's plenty of time for that, but we think most important is the children's game to move to that, because we think they would see the biggest benefits of more football more often with more variety.
In terms of the resources that are available to you as you look to implement this plan, I thought it was striking in around the Women and Girls Plan, one of the lines from Hannah Dingley, it was a lot of talk of empowering volunteers, but at one stage there was mention of we have no money. The statement from the Premier Clubs Alliance said there's zero budget for League of Ireland Academy funding. It feels as though it is incredibly tight in terms of the day-to-day spending around trying to change Irish football.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and try and pretend that it's not difficult with the resources that we've got, but it doesn't, not everything, I've said this quite a few times publicly and privately, that not everything requires money to do what you need to do. In terms of providing a good football experience for children and playing regularly, giving them an enjoyable environment, coaching them in a really nice way, giving them good experiences, it doesn't cost a huge amount of money to do that. Some of the bigger things that we're trying to do requires funding, like the academies, and we're absolutely committed to try and securing that money. And for Women and Girls Action Plan that you referred to, Another good example of government support. Actually, they've given us quite a bit of money since we qualified for the World Cup, and they're really trying to support us, them and support Ireland. So although we need more, we want more, we are genuinely grateful for the level of support that we've got to help us achieve what we want.
Are you worried when you look at the women's game and obviously the failure to qualify for the European Championships, but even, say, what we saw at the weekend and games being called off between Piemont and Galway, it doesn't feel like there's been any increase in terms of attendances, that really the opportunity was there around the World Cup and that success, that it just hasn't been capitalised on?
I think there's obviously a level of expectation that has changed since the qualification for the World Cup and narrowly missed out on Euro. So I think that level of expectation is something we should embrace, and it was a positive thing. There are many more girls that are now starting to play football, and I think that's a really positive thing in terms of our grassroots game. And that success at international obviously gives the opportunity to inspire young girls to play football, and we've seen a huge increase in the percentage of players that are playing, which is great.
A bit of time has passed since the Colin Healy statement and that situation. How do you now reflect on your role in that?
It was a really difficult situation, both at the time and then since. Mm. From a personal perspective, but also an association perspective, it's deeply regrettable how that all played out. I personally never want anyone to feel that way, feel that hurt, that strength of feeling with any interactions with me or the association. So that is something that we need to make sure never happens again. Deepest sympathy for Colin and his own devastating situation of his own personal life. And it's really regrettable that this has happened this way. And I've never had that feedback, personal or professional, in my life, of lacking compassion or respect or integrity for a situation. So that is something that is personally regrettable for me, that someone left and felt that way.
Would you accept that maybe you're struggling to get your message across then, when you look at some of the comments that have come out of that, and you've Stephen Bradley using words like arrogant and disrespectful, doesn't understand Irish people in football, Denise Sullivan lacked class and compassion, Katie McCabe, the captain of the women's senior team, that the process wasn't good enough? They're very strong comments about you and your position.
Obviously, there's two parts of it. How I think there's the human element, which is what I've just talked about, that is really disappointing to receive that criticism and feedback from other people, not just Colin himself. So I accept that and want to make sure that we do better moving forwards. But there's also a football perspective, that it's not unusual for someone to not have their contract renewed. Like, Colin's contract just came to a natural end and we decided to make that decision, and no assurances were given to Colin or his representative. No obstacles were put in his way to go to another club at any point. And we were always consistent about the review.
Is that not the bit, though, going back to Stephen Bradley's comment about understanding Irish people in football, that I think people from the outside would have looked at Colin Healy's personal situation, incredibly tragic personal situation, and felt that he needs to be treated in a different manner? We understand that football is an utterly ruthless business, but actually on this occasion, you needed to step back and understand the bigger picture.
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on any one person's specific comments on this. I appreciate the people you're referring to, significant figures in Irish football, and they're entitled to their views, and I respect them as individuals, etc. But yeah, as I've said, I don't want to keep going down this route to comment on this. I just say again that it's deeply regrettable. I accept my part in that, and I make sure that anyone that I deal with moving forwards in that situation, make sure there's the highest amount of empathy and compassion for anyone in that situation moving forwards.
Stephen Bradley obviously is a very important figure in Irish football. Damien Duff, a very important figure in Irish football. They've had a lot to say in recent weeks about the state of the game. How would you describe your relationship with these key figures in Irish football?
As I said, I'm not going to comment on anything specific of that. We engage with all of League of Ireland clubs, all the League of Ireland coaches. Mm. Seen the individuals you're talking about at different events and meetings, and said hello. Had conversations with them at a light level as such. We've had some events last year where we organised for League of Ireland women coaches, men's coaches, and our academy managers. So we're trying to engage with them. What I would say about the general commentary, and not just about people you refer to, but other criticism around the association, is that diversity is a really good thing. We have a board, a football leadership team, a senior leadership team, and people in the association that are from different backgrounds, from different nationalities, from different industries, from different parts of Irish football. And that is a really good thing. There's a lot of people here that are passionate about what we're doing in Irish football, that are working hard to... Does that mean we get everything right? Mm-hmm. Not all the time, but we always try to do the right thing.
It certainly feels a bit of the public perception is though that you're getting a lot of things wrong. When there is, as you say, you have the League of Ireland and the growth of the League of Ireland, the recent international results getting better again, certainly on the men's side of things, but it is week on week dogged by some sort of controversy, and you as chief football officer, the most important football figure in the country, it feels like that's the overriding story.
Yeah, I can't sit here on a personal level or association level and say it's nice to receive such criticism all the time. Like you said, the men's team are on a positive trajectory. We've launched a new Women and Girls Action Plan. We're about to launch a new education and development strategy as part of our plan. We've got a high amount of applications for our Tier 3 for the men's. We're progressing with the conversation with clubs around spiking contact time for young players. There's a lot of positive things that are going on in the background that are slowly coming to the surface of what we do. So I acknowledge what you've said and realise that narrative, but there are lots of positive things that happen in Irish football as well.
Would you like to have a better relationship with some of those key people, very public people like Damien Duff and Stephen Bradley?
They're doing a good job in terms of what they're doing, and ultimately the best thing they can do is to continue doing what they're doing. I think there's a bit of a misunderstanding, maybe not the level of appreciation, and that's something that we have to take responsibility for in terms of communication, but just of the role of a national governing body and developing football. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of things that are really important. I think the coaches that you mentioned are doing a great job in the League of Ireland. It's really raising the profile of the league, and that's really important. And we continue to try and engage all clubs and all coaches.
What would your message be then as Chief Football Officer to League of Ireland clubs if they're considering a breakaway, which obviously was the next development then from the coaching scheme and their... certainly the initial rejection of that if there is a potential breakaway from the FAI in the works of the coming years, what would your message be?
In simple terms, we need each other. So the clubs need us, we need them. And I've seen that in other countries, worked in another country that has an independent league, which I know has been a bit of talk about that you have to work together with the different stakeholders and the association and the league, whether it lives in the association or doesn't, they need each other. And for us to be successful, we have to work together.
Almost feels like that contradicts what you just said, though, around the relationships with Stephen Bradley and Damien Duff, that there's not that tightness between the FAI and the League of Ireland.
I wouldn't say it contradicts it. Trying to maybe pick some words that I didn't actually say, but we try to engage with all of the clubs and work with them moving forward. It doesn't mean that we get everything right, not all the time, but we always try to do the right thing. And we have to work together. And we, for the leagues and the senior part of the game, I think the most important thing at the moment with League of Ireland and also our future success in the league and also internationally is the development of the academies and clubs taking responsibility for player development. That's our ultimate belief. We want the clubs to take a lead role in player development.
When you look back at the 12 months and the work that's been done with the Pathways Plan, what's the one part you're proudest of?
It probably feels like we've been talking about this a long time. We actually only launched...
It's a 12-year plan, so God help us all by the end of it.
We actually only launched it in February last year, officially, and we didn't actually start implementing it since July 2024. But it feels like we've been talking about it for a lot longer. So it's only been 7 months or so in terms of delivering it. The biggest, proudest thing so far is that we're trying to do the right thing and trying to tackle the big things. We're not just trying to tweak something or improve a little thing here and there to make it a bit better. We're looking at it as a whole bigger picture and try to tackle the big issues in Irish football that ultimately I hope people in the future will look back and say, the line calendar as an example, say, yeah, I didn't agree with that at the time, but actually that was a good thing.
And on the senior men's international side, and obviously staying in League B and heading into the World Cup qualifiers, is there any plan in place to talk to Hamir about extending his contract beyond the World Cup qualifiers?
It feels like he's only just come in the door, so he's had...
It took a while to get him in.
Yeah, that's true. He's probably been in the job for as long as that process took.
So, yeah. You don't want to start another one.
No, I don't want to get into that and talk about that. No, definitely not. So look, we hope he's successful. That's too early to have those types of conversations. Let's just take the positivity of the last two games and enjoy that for now. There's obviously our core aim is to have a successful World Cup campaign, and we'd love to be there. That remains our ultimate goal in the short term, to get to World Cup. And I think that can be the biggest thing that can help change Irish football in terms of inspiring young people, but also inspiring others around the game and in Ireland to continue to support Irish football.
Thanks for your time, Mark.
Pleasure.
No worries.